to the People and Projects podcast, where you'll find interviews and insights to help you deliver projects and lead teams. You can find us on the web at peopleandprojectspodcast.com. This is Andy Kaufman, President of the Institute for Leadership Excellence and Development Corporate. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the People and Projects Podcast. Hey, you know, in our last cast, we started a conversation with Dr. Alan Cohn. He's the author of Influence Without Authority. In this continuation of that discussion, I ask Alan to go through a couple specific scenarios to help us apply the model in practical ways. Let's get to that discussion already in progress. You know, I'd love to pass two scenarios by you. And the first one, since you spend a lot of time on planes, I thought you might have some interest in this as well. So let's say it's an international flight and you are a purser. Now, on some airlines, the purser actually has roll power. But in this case, let's say that they don't have any sort of positional or supervisory power. And let's also add to this scenario that a good chunk of the crew is more senior to you, and you've got a flight attendant who's in business class, and you need to try to convince, let's say it's a her, to go back to help an economy. Now, this business class flight attendant, she's more senior than you. She's probably not going to want to do that. So if you were this purser, walk us through how this model might be used.
Oh, that's a nice little challenge. And of course, it takes place in a very contained space, so it's particularly interesting. Well, I can tell you if I were a purser where I would start. I mean, the first thing I would ask is, so who have I been helpful to on this crew in the past?
Good.
Who might feel some obligation to me? I'd also want to think about the nature of the situation. The world of the flight attendant. Okay. What's worst about the job? Mm. And you know, I do a lot of international flights, so I think I have some idea.
Sure.
It might be that you don't get enough rest. Mm-hmm. There's a question about which job is least desirable: working the carts and delivering food and drinks, or being the setup person who works back in the kitchen. I don't know what they like or don't like, but that's what you might think about.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue for international flights, I think, is the slow periods. I think some people don't like slow periods. They feel like the time goes faster if they're busy and engaged in doing things. Others hate it when they're on the go all the time. So these are the kind of things I would think about in relation to which person I would ask and how I would approach. Then there's the question of, is it something I want to do by asking for a volunteer? And if I got a well enough developed team so that they'd feel like we could talk about this openly? Or are the norms such that what I ought to do is get the person I think's most likely aside and then make the appeal based on what I think would work? For some people, it would be, look, it's about the vision of this airline. You know, we want to give great service. We have a problem because we're out of balance in terms of the number of people in the economy. They're getting restless back there. Could you help me out? Because I think it would be really important for the airline's reputation or for the quality of customer service.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people. I mean, I flew in December on British Air, which was about to have a strike.
Yeah.
And at that moment, I don't think an appeal to we have to do great customer service would have been the thing that worked.
Right.
Although a number of flight attendants told me that they had no idea it was going to come to a strike. That when they voted, they didn't realize they were giving away so much.
Mm.
So it might be more on a personal basis. Listen, would you do this for me? I'll owe you one.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you'll do this for a while, I'll try to find a way to get you an extra hour off so you can have a longer nap.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to give a feel for how you try to diagnose what might be valuable and acknowledge that if the person does it, they get at the very least your gratitude and maybe more.
Right. So look for those relevant currencies. And I think there's something about your dealing with relationships aspect there too, that a lot of times these same people fly with each other. And so really, you know, to your point of, do I always eat by myself? When I show up at the layover, do I just always, sometimes flight attendants call it slam click, you know, they shut the door and they take the phone off the hook, you know, or they lock the door.
Yep.
And so there's something about building those relationships that could.
So that's right. So they don't make enough, enough connection.
Yeah.
It's a tricky thing too, because, I don't know what the norms are for, pursers. Some leaders in those situations pay back by jumping in and doing some of the work directly themselves.
Right.
Others will never touch the actual stuff.
Exactly.
And I don't know, my inclination is to think that when things are busy, rolling up your sleeves is very appropriate.
Yeah.
I think most people in most jobs really value that.
Yeah.
Not they want the boss in the way,
mm-hmm.
but there's probably nothing worse than feeling like you're flat out and somebody's standing there watching you and not helping.
That's right.
So I would guess that that's one of the things the purser most is able to do is say, okay, come on, let's roll up our sleeves here and get this done.
That's great advice, Alan. You know, one last scenario, different setting. We're not on an airplane at this point. We're in an office, and let's say you're a project manager and you report to a really tough boss. I mean, this boss is saying, you need to cut 4 weeks off your schedule, and you look at it, in reality, it just seems like there's no way you can accommodate that change without maybe some impact on quality or some other things. So without some trade-offs, it's guaranteed to miss a deadline or be considered a failure. So let's say you're that project manager in this case. How might the model be relevant?
Well, you love to dream up tough situations.
Well.
the first piece of advice I have is, if you're the project manager, do your homework.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's really not possible?
Good point.
Have you done the hardest, toughest analysis of every step in the process? Are there some that could be cut out and not hurt anything?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know that, none of the rest is likely to work. In fact, in general, I should probably say this for all influence, the first price of influence is being competent at what you're doing. You can't game your way through organizational life. You first have to deliver. You have to know what you're about.
Sure.
So that would be the first step. What really is possible? How much could get cut out?
Mm-hmm.
Then you ask the question, would more resources help?
Mm-hmm.
If I had the resources, what could I do? And then you have to think about how open your boss is to discussing these kinds of things. What kind of relationship do you have? The boss might be tough, but is he or she basically savvy and reasonable?
Mm.
And then I would be asking the boss, which trade-offs would you be willing to make here? You know, we can do it faster. Might have to add some resources in order to do it, so we hurt costs.
Mm-hmm.
Or we might be able to keep costs down and go faster, but we'll hurt quality. In this instance, boss, which would you prefer? I want to satisfy you, and here's a general piece of advice about getting along with bosses.
Yeah.
If it's at all possible, always link to your boss's goals and objectives.
Mm.
That's an important currency. They want to get their job done.
Yeah.
So you might be arguing about the means. I mean, this might be a case of, look, I've looked at every possible thing, and there's no way I can get it done 4 weeks faster unless we slide quality on this, defer finishing some parts of it, or we add more resources.
Yeah.
So, boss, help me think this through, which is better.
Yeah.
But it's not, how dare you ask me to do this?
Yeah.
How dare you ask me to do something so difficult? No, it doesn't really have to be done faster.
Yeah.
You want to join the objectives, and now you're always discussing the means. That's how you get along with tough bosses.
That is great advice. And once again, I wish I would have learned that many years ago.
Lots of us could have saved some aggravation on that one.
Yeah. But, you know, I had a chief information officer tell me once, he said, you know, Andy, I train my people to never say no. We say yes, but. And it seemed a little cheesy at the time, but really over the years of practicing of, yes, we can do that, but this is what we need, is really another form of reciprocity in your terminology, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I can do it, and here's the cost of it.
I love this recurring theme of what are my currencies, remembering reciprocity, keeping that in mind, and the importance of relationships. Alan, it's not a surprise to me that your work has been so influential and so successful, and it's very helpful to me, and I trust to those listening.
Well, thank you. You're paying me in one of my currencies.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, you're in the business of developing people at school and in corporate settings when you consult. And what I find is the more I write and the more I speak, it's pretty easy, not even intentionally, to get too far away from sometimes the reality of what I actually do instead of what I just say. So of all the advice that you give when you write and you speak on this topic of influence, what's the most difficult for you personally to follow yourself?
Oh, what a nasty question.
Yeah.
Well, first I have to tell you that in my academic career, I've had some managerial responsibilities. I spent 7 years as the academic vice president and dean of faculty. Yeah. I spent the last 2 years helping out as graduate dean. So I've had to actually do in everyday life what I have been advising others about.
Yeah.
So I can tell you two things that are really hard for me. The first one is, I think about my particular personality. What's hard for me is to remember to proactively get out and make new connections.
Yeah.
I think I'm very good at relating to anybody who I bump into.
Mm-hmm.
I like people. I like to tune into them. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But when the job gets heavy, I have a tendency to get locked into a stationary place and not to proactively go out and make new relationships in the way I said earlier you ought to do before you know when you need them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a personal difficulty for me. I'm a very good responder. I'm not such a good initiator.
Yeah.
The second one I think is more universal. And that is, as much as I know about this, I wrote the book, I consult about it, I think I'm fairly good at it.
Yeah.
When my personal stuff is really being rubbed or stepped on, it's hard not to write off the other person and to remember to say, okay, what's going on there? What does that person really care about? What does that that not-so-great behavior reflect about what they're really caring about?
Yeah.
And how do I turn that into something I can do something about rather than want to react? I still have to catch myself at it. That's the whole point of a model, of course.
Of course.
But sometimes I find that, you know, what I really like to do is pull the rug out from somebody rather than say, I just had a round with a friend this last weekend.
Yeah.
Somebody who I think habitually turns disappointment into anger.
Yeah.
And he was disappointed about something and sort of lashed out at us. And it was really hard not to want to retaliate, not to turn it into equal lashing out, and to remember to think about, wow, what's going on here? He's really saying he wanted more time with us, not that he wants to kill us.
Yeah.
So that's, for me, difficult. I think it's difficult for everybody. And that's, you know, a million years ago, I read something I've never been able to trace the source of, but I thought it was fabulous.
Yeah.
Somebody said, you're cured in psychotherapy when you catch yourself before the therapist catches you. and I love that because it says, you know, your basic personality will never change.
Yeah.
It's not that the therapist or anything is going to make you into a different person. It's just that you can learn to recognize your own patterns.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to do, and that's what I encourage other people to do.
Yeah.
Notice what your patterns are. And then when you start to do the thing that you really don't get good results from, instead of doing it harder, stop and say, there I go again.
Yeah.
Now what should I do instead? So that's what I try to do, and I'd advise it to anybody else.
I remember a pastor, I heard him say something along the lines once, I'm not what I will be, I'm not what I should be, but thank God I'm not what I was, right?
So, yeah, right.
So we may
thinking forward.
Yeah, we may. So hopefully we're getting better at this. And my answer to that question, Alan, just in the spirit of mutual transparency here, is this whole thing of telling myself stories and jumping to conclusions. And I can tell people till I'm blue in the face to not do that. But it's amazing how I will either not look at somebody as an ally, or maybe I will, but I will be five steps ahead of them where they're not even at. And it's affecting my ability to end up getting what I want or what I think would even be mutually beneficial. So I appreciate you reminding us that this is all about us trying to get better at this, and perhaps we never arrive fully.
Well, I recently finally got around to reading the Crucial Conversation stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, that one of their first steps they call get your story straight.
Yep, that's right.
And it turns out that's exactly, I think, what you're saying.
Exactly.
It's don't develop an elaborate explanation for the badness of the other party.
Yes.
Make sure that you're not leaping to conclusions.
Yeah.
And that would serve all of us well all the time.
Yeah, that one key question that they have in that book is the why would a reasonable, rational, and decent person do what they
exactly.
did, right? And that's a great way. You know, Alan, it is such a pleasure to talk with you today. And for those listening, I highly recommend you get your hands on the second edition of Influence Without Authority. I put a link for this book in the show notes of the cast. And also, Alan has a companion website for the book, appropriately named influencewithoutauthority.com. And I invite you to check that out for articles and resources to learn more. Alan, thank you for joining us today.
What a pleasure from my side, too, Andy. Thanks for having me.
If you haven't already done so, get a copy of the second edition of Dr. Alan Cohen's book, Influence Without Authority. Also, check out the accompanying website for the book, which you can find at www.influencewithoutauthority.com. Links for these resources are in the show notes for the cast. Can I ask you, are you interested in learning how to develop your influence skills, as well as those of your staff? We can help! Contact me today about our leadership development workshops that help you and your teams be more effective leaders. Contact information is in the show notes for this cast. Please join me in the next episode when I interview Clint Padgett, President and CEO of Project Success Incorporated and author of The Project Success Method, a proven approach for achieving superior project performance in as little as 5 days. Until then, thank you for joining us for this episode of the People and Projects Podcast. Have yourself a great week.
So if I say, I didn't mean that, or cut this out, I don't know that I will, but...
In fact, that happens regularly. In fact, even during my introduction saying the Edward A. Madden Distinguished Professorship, I'm almost guaranteed to have to say that twice. sometimes information comes off as overly academic and not sufficiently accessible to practitioners.
Right.
And my observation is that you've done a really good job of straddling both sides there.
Well, I appreciate it. We try really hard on that. I never like being seen as too academic.
Yeah.
That's not one of my aspirations.
Well, and you know, I always even hesitate saying that to somebody because it can come off as an insult. And I don't mean it that way at all. I mean, thank God.
A lot of work that academics do isn't very useful.
And, that's the problem.
I'm not motivated by anything but use. So
yeah.
I'm not. I've always said I'm not a very good researcher because it's not pure. I'm interested in action.
Right. Good for you. Well, I have a kindred spirit in that regard. Just real quick, it started to go a little bit more muffled there, Alan. Did you change anything with your headset by chance?
I did not, but I might have had my hand around the phone in a funny way, so let me try again.
No, it's perfect. No, actually, it all came through just sufficiently, but it was just starting to go muffled. That and that, your results.
That's why I just gripped the phone too tightly, had my hand around the mouthpiece.
That means you care.
I got interested.
the interesting thing about, we can help you. Contact, that was kind of dorky.